Hello and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I'm Chris Austin.
I'm Luke Parker.
And this is a special episode of the podcast because we have a special guest joining us today. And that guest is a photographer and producer, most recently of the Getting Lost documentary movie that had its UK premiere at the Phoenix Cinema, and fellow podcaster for Casino Skunk Productions, for which he has produced multiple podcasts. It is our pleasure to welcome Ralph D. Uppel. Am I pronouncing that right? Uppel?
No, but no one pronounces it right.
God damn it!
You came close, though.
My Google pronunciation and everything.
Well, it's tough because I don't know. I've been raised my whole life as it's pronounced Oppel. It's German, but we're pretty far out from, like my great-great-great-grandfather came over here from Germany, so it's, I have no idea. It's how I was told it was pronounced. People can pronounce it anyway, and I'm fine with that. So, yeah, you'd mentioned right before we started recording that there may be cat shenanigans going on.
Did I hear a meow there?
Yep.
And that wasn't me.
That was mine. As soon as you hit the record button, I closed the door to the room, and now she wants out. But she'll figure.
Perfect
out.
Timing. That's a cat. That's a podcaster's cat right there. She knew exactly when we were going. Well, listen. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, any time. I mean, if there's anyone that can give us some good, honest feedback, I think you're the best person for it because you are a proper podcaster. And that, to me, is someone who does more than one. And by my count, you have six. Is that correct?
I have no idea.
So I'm going to list them and you tell me if this is right. So
you've lost count at this point, hey?
Yeah, on it. Yeah, it looks like it. So
it sounds right. It's probably actually been more, but I'd like to hear what is currently.
Oh, okay. So on record, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. This is great.
So you're currently hosting/running live action Star Wars.
Correct.
Which is pretty self-explanatory. Yeah. The Dharmalars.
Now, the Dharmalars was my first podcast ever. That was in 2006. We started with the second season of Lost. And it went away, it's come back, and then it took another hiatus while I was making the movie Getting Lost. It does technically still exist. We just don't talk about Lost anymore.
Right, but we should be.
Probably.
Did you ever do the entire... You haven't done the whole series yet? Oh, okay. Okay, great. No. So there's
But I think the fun... I think going back is tough since you already know everything. So I don't know, going back and knowing what's happening. The fun about podcasting back while Lost was going was the speculations.
Right. I see.
Yes, I'm going to go let her out. You can mention the next show. I still have you in my ear.
No problem. Okay. So the Dharmalars, yes, which is a Lost podcast. Invincipod, which is about the Amazon Prime series Invincible, really good show. Is that still ongoing?
That's definitely still around as long as they're putting out episodes. I do that with my friend James, who lives in the UK, and he also does live action Star Wars with me.
Oh, brilliant. Yes. Okay.
Which live action Star Wars spawned from Invincipod because, like, between season one and two of Invincible, it was like 2 years. And we're like, well, let's talk about something. So
honestly, the beginning of season two, I needed that. However, 5 minute long recap was at the beginning of that episode. Right. I couldn't remember a thing.
James and I both had read the book Invincible as it was coming out back in 2003 to whenever. So when we found out about that, because he was a Dharmalars listener, when he sent me a DM saying, he's like, dude, they're making an Invincible show. And within about 20 minutes, I had Invincipod.com and the Twitter handles on him saying we're doing a podcast. It's my favorite one to do. I think that one's my favorite one to do.
Is there and just quickly on it, how satisfied are you with the adaptation if you're going from the comics?
It's great because it feels like Robert Kirkman and company he is getting a second pass at something. And so he's really like trimming fat from the comics, but also like expanding and fleshing things out more. It's really good. Like fans of the comics seem to be like, I understand why he made that change, and he did it really nicely.
Oh, lovely.
So it's really good. If I don't know if you've seen the show, highly recommend. Yeah. Give the book a shot. You'll see the changes.
Oh, cool. Sure. Okay. We'll do. Luke, have you seen it?
I haven't. And it's one of those ones that's been at the top of the list for a long, long time.
I'll tell you what, Luke, just watch the first episode.
Just
watch the first episode. That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect advice there, Ralph. all right. So that was, what was that? 1, 2, 3. Okay. Number 4, Kaiju Podcast.
Kaiju Podcast.
Kaiju.
With Jorge Garcia from Lost. Now, so this kind of technically ended. We did a 3-year run talking about Kaiju movies like Godzilla, Gamera, and like any sort of giant monster movie. We talked about for like 3 years, and now it's kind of one of those things where when a new Godzilla movie comes out, like our most recent episode was Godzilla -1.
Yes.
So we'll come out of hiatus to cover that. So whatever the next kind of big like movie like that is, we'll be there. But yeah, that
did
was
you guys
fun.
Come back and do an episode on Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah,
the newest
absolutely.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a massive Kaiju fan. Yeah.
Great. You should check out the show. What's great is each episode just covers one thing, and you don't have to like listen to all of them. Like you could, they're all so parceled out by movie that you can like sort of pick and choose whichever one. Like if you ever just happen to sit down and say, watch Frankenstein Conquers the World, which I highly recommend. You can go through our catalog and see if we covered that movie and then just pop that one on. And that is funny because me and Jorge are friends. He played Hurley on Lost. listen to Darmalars back in the day. And that's how we became friends.
No. So that was going to be one of my questions to you.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, going back to Kaiju, what surprised me with that is just how many there are and that you can do a 3-year long podcast on that. I wasn't aware of it.
We went and saw Shin Godzilla together because we're like massive fans. I think we had seen the Gareth Edwards Godzilla together, and then we saw Shin Godzilla together and went out to dinner afterwards. And it was one of those things where we just sat there and we just talked about this insane movie. Like Shin Godzilla is an insane movie. And afterwards I go home and I kept thinking about this movie and I kept texting and we were texting each other about this movie. Because he had already seen it and he's like, you got to see this movie. I went with him. He saw it for the second time. And it was just one of those things where I'm sitting there. I'm like, kaijupod.com. Nope, it's available at Kaiju Pod on all the socials. And I waited like a month. I waited like a month and I'm like, hey, dude, I have an idea. And he's like, I'm in. And so we just would do two episodes a session and bank them. And then we would release them every other week. So doing two episodes took care of like 1 month. And it was one of those things where like for the 3 years, we never missed our scheduled Monday, every other Monday. It was awesome because his schedule was his schedule. My schedule was mine. And we ended up doing something like 130 episodes total.
Oh my word.
Yeah, wow. It's rad. And there's still stuff we didn't get to, but
yeah, one time I said to myself, I was going to go back and watch all the old Godzilla films, just really naive to how many there actually are.
The Toho ones are something like 35 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that doesn't include like the Mothra movie and Rodan and King Ghidorah. Like it doesn't, like there's a ton. There's so much out there.
Oh, so there's a rabbit hole that I'm yet to
completely fall into. Yeah, but that's what's great. If you decide to just like stop on one and be like, I'm going to watch this, go check our feed and you'll hear me and Jorge talking about that movie and what we think of it.
Okay, so, excellent. Yeah. Does Pacific Rim feature into that at all or not?
Yeah, we did Pacific Rim. Okay. And the podcast was going while Pacific Rim Uprising came out. And it was one of those things where we had this schedule and then we're like, okay, well, Pacific Rim lands on this day. So we'd have to like set aside time in our schedule to be like, this is when this launches. It was awesome. Like we there's all kinds of stuff like we would plan like, okay, are you available to watch, you know, Godzilla King of the Monsters by Monday? If so, that week's episode will be that. And it was like,
that's so much fun.
We took the schedule so seriously. And we never missed a day. Which is, you know, podcasts kind of just come out whenever sometimes, but this was like my most like by the book, like scheduled podcast. Every other Monday you'd get a new one.
That's amazing.
For 3 years as well. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. That sounds like our next new, favorite podcast to listen to. All right. So what's that? Four. Now five, cue the music where you discuss
cue the music.
Film
scores.
That's
a weird one. Okay. So after Dharmalars, like in 2007, I am a big fan of film music, film scores and stuff like that.
As are we.
And what happened was, this is great. What happened was the we were getting something like 27,000 downloads a week on Dharmalars. Like it was a real, like we got number 4 in TV and film on iTunes. And we were like number 8 of all podcasts in iTunes, like on Saturdays. Like, cause we would drop on Fridays. Like these are the days when like podcast was like seriously the Wild West. Like there was like, we were right above like Ellen's podcast, like Ellen DeGeneres, which was just clips from her show. Like it wasn't her podcast. Like it was like Lost was huge and podcasts weren't. And so we were getting stuff out every week. So because of that, I'm like, I love film music. And there was another podcast, like filmscore.net or something had a podcast about film music and they just stopped doing podcasts. It's one of those ones that just dropped off early. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, these guys are always going to like scoring sessions and talking with composers. And I'm like, if I can get people from Dharmalars over to this Cue the Music show, maybe I can go see scoring sessions. Cause it's been my lifelong dream to sit in on a scoring session. But that show dropped off, in like, I don't know, like 2010 or something. I was just like listening to music and sharing music that I like, kind of like I was a DJ and here's the mix and stuff. It was not, it's a not good show. Then during lockdown, COVID lockdown, me and my wife were sort of bored playing video games. We're bored playing, you know, Animal Crossing and binge watching TV. Like it was like getting really old. And we had an old record player we never used, and we decided for our anniversary, let's get a new record player. And so I started collecting vinyl, and I would just get like all these vinyl scores. And so I brought back Cue the Music as a YouTube show. So it kind of still exists. A lot of these podcasts went on hiatus because of the movie, because of the doc. We'll see if Cue the Music comes back. I want to change the format because it was mostly unboxing of vinyl. I want to get back to what it should have been, which is conversations with composers. I've done a couple of interviews on that show with, I've only done two composer interviews, one with Michael Giacchino, who's a friend, and his son Mick Giacchino, who's a friend. But they're both,
I mean,
like,
of all the composers you're gonna do.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that probably now that the movie's pretty much done, get back into Cue the Music, maybe do a monthly interview thing. The problem is like, I don't understand. I can't read music. I don't know music theory. I don't. So like my questions would be like, your music's cool. Tell me about, like, it would be really bad. It'd be really bad.
Well, you know what's Michael, funny about,
yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, so by the way, if Cue the Music, you ever need any help with that, we are here for you.
Okay.
All right.
Absolutely.
We've spoken to a couple of film composers on this. That's amazing. To Volker Bertelmann, the Oscar winner for All Quiet on the Western Front. He did Conclave recently. and we spoke to Paul Leonard Morgan, who did Last Breath, and I think we're scheduled to speak to Rashi Kulkarni, this Indian composer who did a movie for the sake of me, it's escaping me now, but I felt the same way before we spoke to them. I'm not trained in music. So how is that? Do you know what, though? And tell me if you agree with this, Luke. It's surprisingly easy when you just have a love for the music itself. And then it just becomes this conversation about it, almost the music aside. It's about them.
And about the process as opposed to like the technicalities.
I have a concept of an idea. Where it's, and I'll just tell it here. Hopefully no one takes it. Where I want to bring on a composer and have them ask me what my favorite score of theirs is. And they have five chances to figure it out. And so what I like about it is with like, say, Michael Giacchino, he would say, your favorite score of mine is Incredibles. And I would say, that's not it, but let's talk about Incredibles and why, and then go down the list, and it depends on how he gets five guesses. And I was thinking as a format that might be cool, because it will tell me what the composers think their favorite stuff is, and I'm thinking of doing that. I have to set it up, and again, it'll probably be Michael because he's my friend, or Mick's tougher because he doesn't have that much a catalog under his belt. Like, if you're not familiar with Mick Giacchino, folks, go watch Skeleton Crew. He scored that. He did an amazing job. The Penguin, he scored that, and it's incredible. Then he has some other scores that are out there, like a movie called Extinct, which is really good. I highly recommend you checking it out. It was a David Silverman animated movie for Netflix that probably a lot of people have heard of, but like Mick is putting out like great stuff. And so, but him going through his top five would be like really easy, like five. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like, so with Michael, I think Michael knows what my favorite is, which is kind of,
he'd probably get it first try.
If he's been paying attention, which I think he has, which
that could be a really short podcast.
Could you like, let's do this for example. Can you guess my favorite Michael Giacchino in five guesses?
Me?
And I don't think you will. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Like, name five. Yeah, go for it. Go.
Your favorite is Lost.
No.
Oh.
Okay, so there's four. You could we'll split the five between you guys if you want. If you want to go through my favorite, you're not going to get it.
We're not.
This is where me and Michael would talk about Lost for a little bit. Then I'd say, what's your fourth guess? Or your four.
Do you want to go for it, Luke?
Yeah, I'll throw a wild one.
He said
there.
We're not going to get it. So think of the obscure.
One of the Planet of the Apes movies.
No. Too popular.
But then we would talk about that, which are, they're good scores. Okay. Yeah, I like them. Yeah.
Okay I'm going to go with Let Me In.
No. Good score, though. But it would be really funny good. If we did talk about that. I really don't think you're going to get it. If you get this, it's going to be nuts.
Oh, man.
All right, you have two more guesses.
I'm having a look through now.
No, that's cheating.
What?
You can look through it. He's done so many movies.
All right. Man. I'll let you go last, Luke, and I'm going to throw another wild card out there. Is it Land of the Lost?
It's not, but I really like that score. But this is where I would talk to Michael about Land of the Lost.
Okay.
And talk about his, like, him having to use the harmonica, you know, because of the show. And like, oh my gosh, that score, I really like that score.
Excellent.
Interesting.
There's a lot to choose from, to be fair.
Okay.
I will say that my favorite piece by him, my favorite single piece of music of his is Roar, the Cloverfield Overture. It's so good. Also, Kaiju related.
Listening to that today.
We never covered Cloverfield on Kaiju Podcast. We should probably do that. So there's you have one guest. And
how about Zootopia?
Not Zootopia.
Zootopia.
Not Zootopia. But that's where we would talk about. That's where we would talk about Zootopia with Michael, or I would talk to Zootopia about Michael and like why that score came to mind, and you know, and you know, the offshoots and like Mick doing some of the Zootopia shows on Disney and stuff like that, and Zootopia too. But even though he would probably guess because he knows me, but I absolutely love Jupiter Ascending. Ascending is such a great listen.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Like, he starts the album off with five suites. And the reason why there's five suites, he wrote those five suites before they started filming.
Right.
And the Wachowskis would play those on set while they were set doing setups and stuff. So if you, those five suites are amazing. And then my favorite single cue of Michael's is called I Hate My Life. Go listen to my I Hate My Life. Turn it up as loud as you can and just listen to it. It's amazing. It's my favorite single cue of his.
I'm inserting that here. Wow.
So,
okay. But,
so do you, like, if I can get composers in here, like, do you think James Newton Howard would ever guess that my favorite score of his is The Interpreter?
I've never even heard of it.
That's a niche one.
So you all know, like, The Fugitive, right? Like, that was my introduction 100%. As a kid to James Newton Howard. And I he's my second favorite composer of all time. James Newton Howard, so imagine the score to The Fugitive, but less 90s. Even though I think The Interpreter did come out in the 90s, it may not have. No, it didn't come out in the 90s. But it has that same energy, but it's like full orchestra, no like synths, no anything like that. Give The Interpreter a listen. Give it a listen. The first track's not indicative of the rest of the score because there's like a long sort of droning thing for like the first track's like something like 6 minutes long, and the first 3 minutes are kind of this low droning thing, and then it kicks in. Mm-hmm. Just give Interpreter a shot. If you like The Fugitive, you'll like Interpreter. And wow. I'm thinking, like, as a concept for a show, like, I don't have to know music theory. I don't have to know anything really other than just like the music. And I feel like if James Newton Howard says your favorite score, you know, the Hunger Games, I could say no, but I love the Hunger Games and I have a lot of talk about it. And
that's very
definitely
cool.
Talk about at least five
right
tracks that are on his mind.
Right. The format alone allows you the way in. Yes.
Yeah.
That's quite brilliant.
And if he guessed The Interpreter the first time around, then I'm screwed. Show's 10 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly. Or not, because if you love it that much, I'm sure you could wax lyrical about it as long as you
or just talk about the career in general, like, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he started with doing, like, arrangements for Elton John, and I want to say he was there for, like, Elton John's big Dodger Stadium show.
What?
Like James Newton Howard, and then James Newton Howard, like, played or did engineering. He worked with Toto, so I think he's on the song Africa. Like,
come
it's James
on.
Newton Howard's rad.
So, he is absolutely, he's one of my favorites.
But I would love to ask him about, like, the 3 weeks of doing, like, the King Kong score. Like, what was that like?
He came that in Central after, Park like, cue.
Yeah,
come on,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want to spend too much longer on this, but yeah. I mean, could you just off the bat, do you think you could guess what my favorite James Newton Howard score is? Look into my eyes on the camera. You can read my mind here.
I mean, is it obscure? Is it pretty?
No. It's not
is it Waterworld?
No. Luke, do you know what it is?
No.
Oh, okay. The Village.
Was really?
It? The Village.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
all his M. Night stuff. Did you get that M. Night record he put out?
Night After Night? Hell yes, I did.
Yeah, I got
I saw
vinyl.
That you reviewed that on the vinyl. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's
so good. Yeah, there was a Newton Howard concert that he was meant to do here in the UK in 2020. Cancelled.
Oh, okay.
And it's I'm actually glad it was, because I had no idea it was even happening. So I would have been furious if he came and left and I didn't. 5 years have gone by. He has not rescheduled. So I am waiting.
Oh, I thought something was coming up.
Something's coming up. I think he's doing something in Vienna, if I'm not mistaken. Something like that. Yeah, I don't know. It might be a one-off.
He lives in Southern California where I am. And I'm like, put on a show, dude. Do it here. It drives me nuts. I told Michael did the Royal Albert Hall with David Arnold.
I was there. settling the score.
And I've told, oh my God.
Were you there? I said,
no. No. But I told Michael, I'm like, bring that shit here.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, dude, listen, nothing against you. You write good music, but like, I've been a David Arnold fan longer than I have you. Because I saw Stargate in the theater and I was like, holy shit, what is this? Who is this composer? Mm-hmm. And then like 4 years later, like Medal of Honor came out. And that's when I started paying attention to Michael.
Right. Yeah. David Arnold Stargate sounded, it has this kind of sweeping, almost,
it's the best,
Maurice Jarre, Lawrence of Arabia type sound to it, yeah. Almost. He was amazing. The funny thing is, it was me and my brother, who is a studying composer. We went to see the show. We didn't know who David Arnold was. You know, we just saw, oh, Giacchino's doing it with F. Giacchino. And then we're like, who's David Arnold? Which goes to show you, we're born and raised here in London. He is, you know, the breadth of his work as a British composer. We were like, oh, he did that? Okay. He sounds great.
What, he's done 5 Bond movies or 6 Bond movies?
He did, like, the next most after John Barry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he needs to come back. Like, I got to tell Agreed. You guys. This may be a hot take, and I don't want to offend anybody here, but I cannot stand Hans Zimmer. I do not like Hans Zimmer at all.
This is Hans Zimmer. Oh my God. What's happening?
I don't like his score to No Time to Die. Well, it started back in the 90s where it was like, dude, like, finish your own scores.
What does that mean?
It means that if you look at a Hans Zimmer score, his name's at the end, music by Hans Zimmer in. Across the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
In the buried in the credits, it'll say additional music by and have like 6 names. Right. John Powell is one of the people that used to be one of those additional credits. He was able to break free. Klaus mm-hmm. Badelt was one of those guys mm-hmm. who was able to break free. He had a music group called Media Ventures, and it was essentially he would write a 12-minute suite for a movie before the movie came out. And then what would happen is when the movie was done and edited, these other guys would come in, take that 12-minute suite, parse it out, and create a score based on that. And it was one of those things that just got under my skin where it's just like, you know, screw this guy. Like, I don't like it. It makes me mad because when you score by committee, you lose any emotion or any singular vision, and it drives me up the wall. And so, like, people love him and he's like a household name, but you watch something like Lost, which is 120 episodes or something, Michael Giacchino is the only person to write a single note for that show. And you feel that emotion in every single episode. You feel that singular vision
in your soul.
So it drives me nuts that this dude can't finish 2 hours, a 2-hour movie, which is probably like what, maybe an hour and 20 minutes of music. Like, you can't get emotion from a committee. Like, emotion has to come from within like one person. So it just, Zimmer just drives me up the wall. It drives me up the wall. And I feel bad if you guys love him. It's just one of those things that's always just gotten under my skin.
I have noticed that, you know, I mean, I do love Zimmer personally, but, you know, you go look at his scores and there's like a whole myriad of contributors, and it's usually just like the first top title tracks that are really like solely credited.
The craziest thing I saw is on the opening credits of Die Another Day, where it says music by Hans Zimmer. And then after that, it says score produced by someone else.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, what? What does that even mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was a guy working with Hans Zimmer who was getting musicians from like all these. And it's like, dude, no. I don't know if you've seen No Time to Die. I'm a massive James Bond fan, but spoilers. Well, I'm not even going to say. But if you know how the movie ends. It's the most emotional thing after 25 movies, after 60 years, and you got a guy who's like, to me, is like a soulless composer to do it. And it just
That's fascinating.
It drives me nuts.
That's
it
so interesting. Because, okay, so you're also talking to someone who loves Zimmer. I have heard of
That's fine.
I've also, I remember this was someone studying music expressed those same feelings towards me once. And I'm aware of it. I'll say this though, the music is thrilling for me. We've seen Zimmer live and we're seeing him again at the end of the year. And in terms of concerts and I'll say there are some things truly, like Gladiator hits my soul in a way that's, you know, I mean.
You like that war theme at the beginning, which is essentially Mars by Holst's planet, Mars.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, incredible. Probably Lisa Gerrard's vocals, but.
Yeah. Here's something that I think is really fun. Maybe you guys can check this out. I really like his theme, his sort of soft piano theme for Man of Steel. There's a really, it's really good. And I'm assuming that was in his 12-minute suite that he did before the movie. It's a really nice piece. And I always liked it. I'm like, that's really good. And then I started listening to James Newton Howard's score to After Earth, which I think was his last collaboration with M. Night.
Mm-hmm.
And that piano theme is in there.
What?
100%. And now the movie, I think Man of Steel came out like 2 months before After Earth. But I was like, so there's no way they like one copied the other. And I was wondering if it just happened to be like a rejected theme from the Dark Knight trilogy. Mm-hmm. Like something they had worked on and didn't put in, because it's the same. It's the exact same piano. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh.
It's the same in both. It's so funny. And I was just like, oh man, like, cause I love James Newton Howard so much. And I'm not as in love with Hans Zimmer so very much. So like, I remember watching like Dark Knight for the first time and being like, oh, James Newton Howard got all the sort of Bruce Wayne emotional stuff and Hans Zimmer got all the action, and you can hear it happening as you're watching the movie.
To the point where the Dark Knight Rises, you hear the loss of Newton Howard completely.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So if you were to bring Zimmer on to your podcast, again, another short conversation.
It might be, but I mean, he can go through, if he wants to go through his five, that's great. I would probably tend to go pre-Media Ventures, like mid-90s for my film. Even I would always say, oh, I like Lion King. Like he did Lion King, and I don't think there's additional music by it. It's just back when he did that. But like I watched Lion King recently, and the music sticks out like a sore thumb. It's so bombastic and like I don't know if it's the mix or what, but it's like, oh, maybe it's not that. So it'd probably be like Man of Steel.
when we went to see Hans Zimmer live, the Lion King suite for me was the standout as well. It was like one of the most amazing things I've seen live. Yeah.
Tell you what, Ralph. Yeah. Let us know when you're in London. We're going to book tickets to a Zimmer concert. We're going to drag you along. And let's see what you say afterwards.
I love, well, listen, watching live music is amazing.
Yeah.
Any live performance with an orchestra, I like tear up. Disney, over at the Disney Music Hall in LA, I think it was last year or the year before, they did a tribute to Basil Polydorus, and I was just like bawling. So Basil Polydorus, he was a Greek composer. So if you know his music, or if you're familiar with Conan the Barbarian score.
Not overly.
A friend of mine said that it's the greatest score ever made. And I was like, I can't argue with it. It's really good. If you like Gladiator, listen to Conan the Barbarian. RoboCop, you have to have seen RoboCop. Okay.
It's a blind spot.
Okay, but watch RoboCop. RoboCop's amazing. Okay, Starship Troopers?
Oh, flippin' hell. You're really thinking to think less of me now.
Okay. So you probably haven't seen, like, Endless Summer, Blue Lagoon.
Okay, this is why I don't know the guy.
He passed away, like, maybe 20-something years ago. Do yourself a favor. Just look him up. Look up, like the ones I mentioned, RoboCop, Starship Troopers is an amazing score. But Conan, I think, is his most famous. I'm trying to think of other movies. I think one of his later movies was Sam Raimi's For the Love of the Game.
Dude, wow, you are the first guest we've had on that has called me out to such an extent. I mean, no one has ever revealed my blind spots so thoroughly.
Right. But you should see RoboCop. RoboCop is probably the greatest sci-fi movie of the 80s. RoboCop's amazing.
That's a big claim.
But you know what RoboCop is, right?
For sure. Yes, Paul Verhoeven. Yeah.
Oh, he did there's a Paul Verhoeven movie called Flesh and Blood that he did. Amazing score. Like, you don't have to go watch these movies. Watch RoboCop. But listen to the scores.
I'm going to look him up now.
Listen to the scores. Okay. I would say right off the bat, pop on Conan the Barbarian, followed up with Starship Troopers.
Okay, I'll do that. I'm going to add that to my list.
He kind of lives in between, like, around, sort of in between, like, a John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith.
Ooh.
Almost orchestral stuff. Mm-hmm. Brings in synths every once in a while. Listen to Conan if you really want to listen to that kind of like big orchestra, like gladiator type of, not Zimmer gladiator, but like, you know,
mm-hmm.
barbarian music. And then RoboCop is just, it's amazing. I would say watch you RoboCop before listening to the score.
In between Goldsmith and Williams, you are selling it to me.
It's in that, like, he was the guy that they got, like Verhoeven got. There are some other dudes who used him. I'm trying to think. He's got a pretty big, he did a lot of movies, but you have to listen to Conan. Listen to Conan like cool. when you're done with this.
Okay.
When you're doing editing or whatever you're doing.
Yes.
Pop on Conan the Barbarian.
I 100% will.
I don't know how old you guys are. If you remember the N64, were you around when the N64 came out? Remember the commercial for The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time?
God, no.
That uses his music from Conan. Uh-huh. Or he composed and he redid it for that commercial. I'm trying to think how you would know him. What movie you would know
him from. Honestly, how am I not? That's it crazy. It gets
deeper and deeper, like Cherry 2000. Like, you probably have no idea what Cherry 2000 is.
No.
Yeah. Lonesome Dove. He did a
That's American, Robert Duvall, right?
Yeah.
Never seen it.
I think you don't have to see that.
Okay.
You absolutely should watch RoboCop, though. RoboCop's amazing.
I know. Okay, you've pushed it hard enough that I'm going to maybe tonight.
Yeah, watch RoboCop. You'll be shocked with, like,
okay.
It's like satire. It's brutal. It's violent. It's
some,
like,
great practical effects as well.
Oh, yeah?
And it's like, I feel like in today's climate, like, it's like corporations run the city. It's all about, like, commercialism. And there's, like, these commercials that play, like, throughout the movie that are just, like, it's satire. Dude, it's so good. RoboCop, like, sit down, lights off, surround sound, or whatever you could. The most optimal way, turn off your phone. And just, like, watch it. It's so fun.
I promise you I'll do that. Yeah. We are we go to film concerts all the time. The last one that I went to was Howard Shore 2 weeks ago. He did a concert here in the UK. And the next one's
Ed Wood?
He did Ed Wood. By the way, the theremin live. I've never heard the theremin played live. That was super cool.
That's one of my dreams. is to get my hands on a or on a theremin.
On a theremin?
Yeah.
How do you even? Yeah, what is it? I mean, it's like,
so Michael said he has one. I keep telling him to take it out of storage so that I can use it. But then I'm working on another movie with friends, and there's music in it. And I found out that one of the people we want in the movie, she just got a theremin, and I'm like, let me use it. I want to use it.
Right, right. So yeah, that sounded very good. And the next
Ed Wood would probably be my one for Howard Shore.
Oh, wow. It's very kooky. It's very strange. Yeah. It has this weird offbeat sensibility to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like it. I really like that score. There's some good stuff in it.
I'm not going to bother telling you what we're going to see next. It is Gladiator Live but at the Royal Albert Hall, but that's fine.
Yeah. Have you listened to Mars by Holst?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounds like the same, right?
Oh, I never realized. I haven't listened to it in a long time. Yeah.
Right. Play them side by side. It's fun.
I'll be honest with you. Cue I did not foresee this opening being 40 minutes long.
That's fine. You brought up film scores. How many of us are out there? Are out there to like gush about
exactly?
Weird
yes.
Things.
Yeah. We could just expound on that forever.
Right.
But yes, finally, your what I have found your last podcast to be is Lanterns Live, where you do live episodes.
That's my most
discussing,
recent one, yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's the Green all Lantern. Green Lantern, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sitting on my couch, thinking about the new series that's coming out. There's a Lantern series coming out. The new book by Jeremy Adams is amazing. If you're not reading the current Green Lantern, check it out. I have a giant Kyle Rayner statue behind me. You probably saw that.
I see it now.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where I'm just like so excited about it. And I've been doing these live streams like with live action Star Wars and Invincipod for like the last 3 years. And I'm like, they're so easy to produce because once you're done, it's on YouTube. And so I was like, wonder if I could do like a Lantern show live. And I looked up lanternslive.com. It was available. Went to the socials. I'm like, oh. In 2 days, I was like doing a live stream about like some Green Lantern action figure that came out. And right. So that's the newest one. I just started that in August. And I have a lot of fun doing that one. Yeah.
How excited are you for Lanterns, the new HBO series coming soon?
We haven't had Green Lantern in live action since 2011. And people didn't like that one. With Ryan Reynolds.
Like,
it's one of those things where it's like, they've been talking about the show Lanterns for years. And now the fact that like, we're actually getting like leaked set photos, it's becoming more real. And I'm like, okay, like I'm very excited because it's actually happening. If you want to hear something messed up in the documentary, we did an interview with Damon Lindelof and we did it in his office at Warner Brothers. And when we got in, he said, okay, cool. Like, just set up anywhere you want in here. I'm going to go downstairs and do some writing. Shoot however you want. Just make sure you don't point the cameras at the whiteboard. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we move the whiteboard and they set up the shot and we're all good to go. And the very next day, the rumor came out that Damon Lindelof was producing the Lantern series. And because I'm a nice guy and because I didn't want to be a creep, I never looked at the whiteboard and I was kicking myself. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe if I would have saw that board, even if it didn't say like Lanterns on it, I would have picked up the context clues knowing that's what he was working on. And I would have asked him about it. I have a messenger bag that I had with me there that has 3 Green Lantern patches on it.
Oh,
and God. I don't know if he noticed it.
Right.
But if he did, he was really cool and didn't like bring it up. And I was like, so bummed. I was so bummed. I'm like, man, I hope he shows up to the premiere of the documentary because that's all I want to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to try it. I'm going to see if I can get him on the show because I know he's a Green Lantern fan. Like, not like he's, if you look at Lost at Comic-Con before season 1 happened, where they did the Comic-Con presentation of Lost and showed the pilot episode, he's wearing a Green Lantern shirt at that time. And that's before like Green Lantern made a big resurgence in the comics. So he's been a fan for like a while. So I would just want to talk to him about Green Lantern. If for some reason he sees this podcast and this conversation is left in, I would very much like to talk to him about Green Lantern. He doesn't need to talk about his show if it's not out yet and he can't like say anything. I just want to talk to him about Green Lantern because
I mean, maybe it's a good thing you didn't see that board. Maybe it would have given away season 2's finale.
Well, I would have been afraid that, well, yeah, there's that. But I would have been afraid. I was afraid that if I did, well, that the news came out the next day after I was there. And I'm a massive Green Lantern fan. Like, if he would have been like, how did this get out?
Oh,
who's
shit.
Been in the office?
The guy with
and
the lantern
stickers.
And then
the first
stickers.
Thing he looks at me and have a Green Lantern tattoo on my arm. And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to think it's me. WB's going to come after me for like this information. wasn't
the
case.
Tattoo gave it away. Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't the case. He's like, wait, wasn't there a guy with 3 patches? Green Lantern patches on his bag yesterday, and this news is out today. So,
I mean,
it wasn't me.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
Yeah,
I am beyond excited, and there's only one reason, and that's Damon Lindelof being involved in it. I don't even need to know what it's about. I'm not a Green Lantern fan. I don't know anything about the character, but in my opinion, anything that Lindelof touches for television is gold. Did you see Mrs. Davis?
I haven't. I also haven't seen The Leftovers.
Okay. Oh, finally. So I get my end of this thing now where it's like you had, right. You had RoboCop and Conan. Okay. Lovely. Well,
you know what I'll tell you about The Leftovers is I popped it on and in like the first like 2 or 3 minutes, a dog gets shot in the head.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not in the right headspace for this right now. Maybe I'll revisit it down the road. And everybody says how great it is. And I really want to watch it. But I'm like, I don't want to see a dog get shot in the head again.
Yeah. You got to fight through that. You got to fight through that. Honestly, The Leftovers is one of the greatest things that's ever existed. And if you love Lost, Ralph, if you love Lost, this is Lindelof being almost like unleashed.
Yeah.
It is and only 3 seasons, so easily digestible.
And it's HBO seasons, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
so not...
Max Richter's score for that show is... I mean, we talk about Giacchino wrenching your heart out and reaching into your soul. The same thing. Honestly, I couldn't recommend it more. Like, drop everything. I mean, if you want to leave now and cut this short.
I absolutely loved Watchmen.
God, amazing. So good. Yeah. Amazing.
I mean, just, I'll have to pop it back on. Maybe it'll pick up where I left off so I don't have to watch the dog get shot in the head again.
Right. If you want, we can send over a timestamp of exactly right after the dog.
Like it had to have been like 45 seconds in or something. It was not. It was
very
not
early.
Long.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. So I was sitting here. We were sitting here, me and my wife, and I popped on. What is that show? Is it called Yosemite? No. Yellowstone. We put on Yellowstone. And we got to like the first like 20 seconds, and my wife's like, "I don't want to watch this," and we shut it off. Have you seen Yellowstone?
Haven't.
So opening scene, it's quiet and the camera's panning across the road and it's revealed that there's been a car crash. And as it slowly goes down the road, you see that it was attached to a horse trailer in this car crash and it pans across and there's a horse suffering and Kevin Costner holds a gun up to its head. And I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
Not watching Yellowstone.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
that's
it's like,
fair.
I can't, like, I'm like, I'm not in the right headspace.
Yes.
To watch this.
Yes. So. And I personally think, I mean, it's a bold move to kill any animal on screen, especially though when we're talking about your household pets, your cats, your dogs.
Yeah.
You kill a dog on screen, that's like a cardinal sin. So I get the opening of The Leftovers. I just finished this morning the final episode of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the Amazon Prime series. Oh, yeah. Donald Glover. Fantastic series. Have you seen it?
I've seen the first episode.
Okay. Brilliant show.
Yeah.
I hope it's not a spoiler to say the final episode, there's the death of a cat. And I almost, for the love of me, as good as this series was, as a protest, I almost paused it. It's tough. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus, there might have to be a part two someday.
did we go through all the podcasts at least?
We went through all the podcasts, so at least we got okay. that covered. Where do you find the time, honestly?
Well, they're a lot of them aren't active. Like Lanterns Live is active. Invincipod only happens when there's new Invincible episodes.
Okay.
And live action Star Wars has kind of gone the same way. So we're in a hiatus for Invincible. We'll come back to Invincipod in like a year when the six episodes drop or whatever. And then Andor is at the end of this month. So like I'm not doing anything right now.
Okay.
Unless there's Green Lantern news that drops, then I just jump on right away. I'll cover a couple of the monthly issues. So
do you know when is that meant to drop? Do you know Lanterns?
Sometime early next year.
Oh, it's next year. Okay, okay.
They're still shooting. They're just shooting. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, fine. We've still got a ways yet. Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, and we may have to do another episode someday, but if you're willing to spare 10 minutes, I would love to ask you straight off the bat, going all the way back to the beginning, just tell us a bit about your background, where you grew up, and most specifically, what were the films or TV shows or comics that inspired you or flicked that switch in you that made you who you are today?
Yeah, there's a town in Southern California, just south of Los Angeles, called Downey. And Downey is in between like four major freeways, the 5, the 605, the 91, and the 710. It's like, boom, right in the middle. Now, this town is really cool. They have a large like aerospace or facility there where they built planes for World War II. And then, but also like, it's where the space shuttle was built. In this town of Downey. Not only that, it's the home of the oldest surviving McDonald's. So if you ever see like a classic old McDonald's, that's there. It's the home of the very first Taco Bell. Was Glenn Bell, who is the creator of Taco Bell. The first Taco Bell was in Downey, California. I'm from Downey, California. The Carpenters, the band. I don't know if you're familiar with the group, the Carpenters, yeah. Karen Carpenter. From Downey, and James Hetfield from Metallica, also born in Downey. So it's this really cool, like amazing, like city kind of just like, it's a little like off the beaten path from LA, but you know, we're like a stone's throw away from like downtown. So that's where I grew up. I love it there. And I spent my entire childhood there. And then, when I turned 18, I moved to Orange County, which is south of there. I'm in Anaheim, which is by Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
I started working at Disneyland. I worked a combined total of 16 years at Disneyland, like 10 years in day custodial, doing like walking around the park as a sweeper. And then the last 5 years I did it, I was do third shift, graveyard shift. Hosing down the park and pressure washing and stuff like that, and driving around on like these street sweeper things. So there's that. Again, like I was born in 77. And so by the time Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, my mom said I wasn't old enough to see it. And it really bummed me out. She said, it's too violent. You can't see it. But she bought me the cassette, the John Williams cassette. And so since I was 4 years old, I've been like solely focused on like listening to film music. And that's where my love of film music came in. And then, you know, Back to the Future score was my first CD, or soundtrack was my first CD. And I just love the Silvestri track so much. Mm-hmm. And then, from there, it just snowballed, you know.
Nice.
Elfman's Lovely. Beetlejuice, James Newton Howard, The Fugitive, and just like, Michael Giacchino's Medal of Honor, RoboCop. and I just started like finding all these composers that I really like. One of my favorites, and I mentioned briefly, is John Powell. I think John Powell is just a goddamn genius. I love his music so much.
He's incredible.
If you want to know my favorite, my number one, John Powell, if you were to come on my show, I guarantee you want to guess my number one.
I know it.
I'll give you one shot.
Okay, Face Off.
Because I talk about it a lot. Oh, no, it's not Face Off. That was like his first score he did outside of Zimmer's Media Ventures, because Zimmer was doing scores for John Woo.
Uh-huh, yes.
And then
Broken Arrow and
And I think that's why John Powell got solo, because Richie Cunningham, Ron Howard, uses Hans Zimmer a lot. And I was like, please don't have Hans Zimmer do solo. I don't need Hans Zimmer doing a Star Wars score. And it seems like, well, he obviously didn't, but then John Powell got it. So I was like, and he put out an amazing score for Solo, other than the Kessel Run, which just fucking sucks. I hate that game. It's such a cobbled mess. It sounds awful. Oh, my alarm's going to go off. Hold on. Let that go.
Is that your doorbell?
No. It's my alarm, and it's 11 o'clock, so it's the most amount of.
Oh, okay. We'll let you go soon.
But my favorite is Evolution. Evolution.
Oh.
The movie.
The David Duchovny film?
Yeah.
Ivan Reitman movie? Who scored
amazing
that?
Amazing film. Amazing score.
That's my favorite John Powell score.
John Powell did that?
Yeah, it was early in his career. Give that a listen. Give it a listen sometime.
Okay, because I love the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think it was a DreamWorks film, and it was like, he's like DreamWorks guy. Like, he does all their like animated stuff.
Right.
And as much as I can give a shit about How to Train Your Dragon live action.
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad they got him back to do the score.
Oh, he's coming back.
He's doing the score.
Fascinating.
So new renditions of the original score.
That's very exciting.
So I'll get a good album out of it, at least.
For sure.
I don't care about the movie, but give me the album.
Yeah, hopefully a good vinyl out of it. Yeah. Fun fact. Is it November, Luke? We're going to go and see How to Train Your Dragon
in concert
at the Royal Albert Hall. Listen, we fill up our yearly calendar with film concerts.
You don't get that stuff. I'm near LA, and we don't get any of this stuff. Nobody does film score performances. It's crazy.
That is crazy, because I live off of it now. I would have thought, bear in mind, I've never been to LA, but LA being the central hub, you know, dude, you got to get down here.
Yeah.
You got to get down here. There's a lot of good shit going on.
That'd be great. I know people that know, well, obviously Michael, but that know David Arnold. And I'm like, if I go to the UK, I need to meet David Arnold, because I absolutely love David Arnold. Michael was working on a movie, and I said, hey, you know who would be really, really good at that, doing that music for that movie you're working on, is David Arnold. He's like, I'm doing it. I just love, like, David Arnold needs more work. His Godzilla score is amazing. Independence Day is great. Mm-hmm. His score to Shaft. Have you heard his score to Shaft?
He did Shaft.
Yeah, he did the one. It was I'm blanking on his name. He just passed away recently. He did Boys in the Hood.
The director, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm blanking too. I think I know who you're speaking of. Though it begins with an F. I think no.
I don't think so. I don't know.
John something, no?
Singleton.
John Singleton. We got there together.
So John Singleton did a movie called Baby Boy. And
yes, I loved it.
First time collaborating with David Arnold. David Arnold did that score. Then they went on to do, David Arnold scored Too Fast, Too Furious, which John Singleton directed. Oh, there's my Mac out here.
I had no idea about this.
But he did the score to Shaft. Now, you gotta listen to the score to Shaft. Are you marking this down? Are you gonna, like, I don't know how much you edit on these. or you're just going to let it run. I'm fine with
it. We let it run. Yeah.
If you go back and listen, like, jot this stuff down. David Arnold's score to Shaft is so fucking good. I might have a, I have this production meeting in like an hour, and I think I'll listen to the Shaft on the way there. It's so good. Have you since like listened to like his James Bond stuff?
Yes.
Like, it's like orchestrations. It's yeah. very, very heavily influenced by John Barry. His Shaft score is like James Bond, where it's like full orchestra, but bring in a bass, bring in a electric organ. Like, it's so good.
It must be so much of a vibe, that waka waka waka. They must have that, you know.
It's amazing.
Oh,
listen to David Arnold's score for Shaft. I would say first, then Conan, and then watch RoboCop.
Okay.
Oh, and then Evolution.
Okay. Done.
Evolution.
All right. This episode is going to be full of so many quick needle drops. I don't know how long it's going to be.
But... Oh, you can add. Oh, you're adding needle drops. All right. Then let's. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. This is going to be one to listen to. Well, I'll say this, Ralph. If you're up for it, we'd love to have you back at some point.
We need
this
to talk
year.
About the movie.
Because we didn't. Yeah, exactly.
Do these shows usually
fine.
Run like an hour?
Oh, no. I mean, I was thinking, because I like to be respectful of people's time, half an hour, 45 minutes. We're well over an hour now.
Right. But I mean, as far as your shows go, are you cutting this one in half or
no? I'm keeping
like,
it.
Do you let some go? Do you like let some go longer?
Because no.
I can probably
yeah.
Talk,
we let
like if you want to talk about the movie, I can talk for about 20 minutes to a half hour.
You know what? I would rather have you fresh so that we can dig into it. I mean, my girlfriend's wait. I think she's made dinner.
Oh yeah,
so I don't think she would appreciate it. Yeah,
it's 11 over here.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, well that's why I'm on my whiskey already.
Ooh. Well, I mean, if you want like another, if you want to talk a little bit longer about anything, we can. Like, I don't want to like feel like you're not. I'm not rushed for time at all. I'm the producer of this movie, so they're going to be waiting on me no matter what. And I just have like a 30-minute drive. So if you want to talk a little bit about anything else we talked about or something pre-movie, like the questions you had before you started getting into the movie.
I personally, I don't know how you feel, Luke. I'm happy to keep it as it is because I'm so thrilled with what we've already spoken about. And I like that there's so much more left to cover. I mean, I hope that you would want to join us again to even dive into that as well.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I worked on the movie for 3.5 years. So it's one of my, one of the things that I'm like, I've talked about it a lot.
Sure, yes. So, I'm sure
so
you have.
You guys started coming in. You mentioned Lanterns Live and you mentioned Film Musical. Like, I'm like, I'm so amped up right now.
Let's go for
that.
Stuff. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, now you want to talk about your work. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this thing I worked 3 years on. But I'm more than happy to come back and talk about that. I'm trying to think what else. If you bring up James Bond, it's going to be another hour of not the movie.
Okay. You know what? That's a good thing because we have a film club, an international one that's been going on since the pandemic. And currently we are going through all the Bonds.
Which one are you at?
We are at Never Say Never Again. You know, the unofficial.
Okay. So I have a friend named Patrick Cotner. He produces a show called George Lucas Talk Show. It's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Patrick is currently going through a watch of all the Bond movies. He says they're boring. And I'm like, I totally get it, dude. And he said he was on Octopussy. And I said, are you going to watch Never Say Never Again? And he's like, no, because I have to pay for it. And I'm like, you're probably fine. Have you guys watched it yet or not?
No, I personally, that's tonight.
So I watched it recently because I don't know how many times I've watched through the entire series of Bond. But I know as soon as the pandemic started and we were on lockdown, I've watched the series all the way through, all 25 official, at least 4 times. So that's the 25 movies.
Wow.
Like, I love Bond, and I'm struggling with just once.
Yeah. So I never really cared about Never Say Never Again, because I was a little bit snobby about it. But during lockdown, I'm like, I pop it on when I'm done watching. I don't do Octopussy, then Never Say Never Again, then A View to a Kill. It goes.
Oh, because it's not part of the, yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely not. Like, you do not consider it that.
Oh, really?
But I recently, since rewatching it again, I think I've seen it a total of like now 4 times. The music sucks. It sucks.
Oh,
the music is bad. And when
who is it? It's like Maurice Jarre, isn't it?
No.
Who is it? Oh, okay.
It's not good. I forget. I looked it up. I didn't recognize the guy. He did like Yentl.
Dude, it's Maurice Jarre.
Flash Gordon?
It's him. Yeah, the ghost. It's him.
No, it's not. There's someone else's name.
I'm telling you.
You're making me look something up.
I know. I'm going to also look it up, see who gets there quicker. I could have sworn it was, which is why I was really looking forward to it.
It's not. It's not him. Okay. No. Cast and crew.
Or cast and crew, composer. It's Michel Legrand. Yeah. There you go. Look at that. I just got schooled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just watched it. So if you would have said that, I would have been, oh, yeah, it's probably him. No, it's right. Bad. It's really bad music. I know that there's people out there who have taken the movie and dropped in like John Barry music. And they've done it where they have the, because you're not going to get the gun barrel at the beginning.
Oh.
It's going to feel really off. Mm. And do you know the story about Never Say Never Again?
The guy McClory who owned the rights to Thunderball. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's basically a Thunderball remake. But I've noticed since watching it the last few years is that I'm starting to really like it more than Thunderball.
Oh.
If it had,
I didn't like Thunderball, to be honest with you.
Thunderball's very boring. It's very slow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the guy who did the underwater effects,
Rico Browning. Incredible fight scene. Yeah.
He does the underwater effects in Never Say Never Again. And he did the original underwater photography for the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Rico Browning. Look, the credits of this are insane. You know, like Irvin Kershner, the director of Empire Strikes Back.
Follow-up.
Jack Schwartzman is the producer, and Talia Shire, who are Jason Schwartzman's parents. Douglas Slocum is the cinematographer, who I believe he did the Indiana Jones trilogy, if I'm not mistaken.
What?
Like, the people in this, the writer is Sempill Jr. What's his first name? But the writer of the movie is the writer of the Flash Gordon movie, but is also like the creator of Batman, the 66 TV series starring Adam West. Like, this is, it's, dude, everything around this is nuts. Kim Basinger's in it. Rowan Atkinson's in it. Like,
Rowan Atkinson?
You guys are going to have a blast.
Oh my!
If you can get around the music, it's not a good movie. But there's stuff in here where I'm like, oh man, like they really went for it. So I'm excited for you guys to watch that.
Okay.
If you ever need anybody on anytime to talk about James Bond, I don't really consider myself an expert, but I know everything about like James Bond movies, like pretty much outside.
Let's do it. Out.
Like, yeah. And is this your first time watching them?
No. No. But it's our first time as a film club group. Yes, I grew up with them, but
you've seen all of them.
I've seen all of them, okay. Except the one blind spot was on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which I'm like, is that my favorite Bond film of all
it's
time?
It's my favorite.
Now? Maybe, yeah.
Like Casino Royale is so good, but like, and listen, in my ranking of Bonds, I think that George Lazenby is my third favorite.
And your first?
My first, I think is, it's, I used to say he was my first. George Lazenby was my first. He's so good. He feels like Ian Fleming's book, James Bond.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I am a massive fan, and this could be because it's the first one I saw. I'm a massive fan of Timothy Dalton.
Dalton!
I think Daniel Craig is great. Dalton was doing Daniel Craig, like, before anybody could appreciate it.
Oh, really? See, I have no memory of the Dalton films.
Yeah.
Okay.
Living Daylights is my third favorite Bond film, after Casino Royale and Honor Majesty's. Honor Majesty is so good. So underrated.
It is brilliant.
It looks so... It's probably the best looking Bond film. I love that movie.
And I love how the director is in, and then he was out. Out! Peter Hunt, who used to be an editor, right?
He edited all the Bonds up until that point.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you guys
Casino
have a
Royale
ranking on your...
Sorry.
Do you have a ranking on your Bonds? Like...
Oh...
I put
not
Sean
officially,
Connery so
but,
low, but there's only six dudes.
Yeah, so I know. I don't have a ranking, no. However, On Her Majesty's Secret Service is my favorite. Luke, yours is?
Mine's, well, definitely Casino Royale.
That's great.
That's the only James Bond film for me that's worthy of five stars, but short, closely
not
followed
Honor
by
Majesty's?
From Russia with Love.
From Russia with Love is my favorite Connery movie. It's also his favorite Connery movie.
That's really good, to be fair. Yeah. I have to watch Casino Royale again because I was not a fan when I first saw it. Everyone goes crazy about it, and I think I wasn't ready for it.
I'll tell you this. As you watch these in order, you're going to find out why Casino Royale was so important. Because the movie that came out before it was Die Another Day, which is just like an abomination. And it was Die Another Day came out like right after like 9/11. And people were in a different headspace for space lasers shooting at the Earth. Like, we were past that. We're already getting into Jason Bourne, and it seemed like that's what people needed. So when you watch Die Another Day and then go into Casino Royale, you're like, oh my God, a good James Bond. Like, it's
much
like
more grounded, and it's like a
whiplash.
It's a reboot, right? It's a, essentially, in the entire official series, it's a reset of the entire character.
Yeah,
right?
It's telling James Bond during his first mission, which, again, this whole, like, Kevin McClory thing and the rights to Spectre and all this stuff, Cubby Broccoli always wanted to do Casino Royale, and they never had a chance. Well, after Tomorrow Never Dies, Barbara Broccoli finally got the rights for Casino Royale, and they're like, we can't just bring Pierce Brosnan back. We have to do a hard reset and be like, this is James Bond at the beginning. So
did you ever see the other Casino Royale?
I've never seen it.
Oh, well.
I heard it's so awful.
Dude, it is. I didn't even know about awful. It is something to observe. It is a car crash in slow motion okay. And it is magnificently crazy for it.
Yeah, I have the soundtrack. Like Burt Bacharach, right? Did the soundtrack and stuff, yeah.
He like won an Oscar for one of his songs for it, I think, yeah.
Yeah, The Look of Love.
Right, okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay, before
okay,
we go.
Okay, so real quick. When you guys are done with this, if you don't have anything in mind as far as continuing after James Bond, I highly recommend, if you haven't watched them, there's two films with James Coburn called Our Man Flint and In Like Flint. These are movies that came out in like
Our Man Flint. Flint.
It was America's answer to James Bond, James Coburn. They're like camp. It's like campy James Bond, with tremendous, tremendous scores by Jerry Goldsmith.
Done. Sold.
So when you're done with Bond, you're gonna really appreciate like the Flint movies. They only made two in 67 and 69.
Thank you for the recommendation.
I never heard of
them.
Look cool.
Yeah.
They have a lookalike of Sean Connery in the first one, and he's 0008. But there's so that's the level of like seriousness.
Oh, wow.
Dude, it's amazing. It's amazing. So when you're done with Bond, I say go watch that. They're great, like parodies of the Bond movies.
Okay.
If you watch Austin Powers 2, he's watching In Like Flint. He says, "Oh, In Like Flint, my favorite movie." But go watch those.
There you go.
I found out about those scores because I saw the movies because I saw the score CD on a shelf, and I'm like, 1960s spy movie that Jerry Goldsmith did the score. And if you get the vinyl from back then, there's a track on the vinyl that's not on the CD, and it's called something like Disco a Go-Go or something like that. And if you look at the credits, it said written by Jerry Goldsmith and Randy Newman.
What?
1967, stop it. Randy Newman helped Jerry Goldsmith on this one score. It's rad.
That's crazy. Okay. We're looking
this is
up.
This is like 1967, 1968, or 69. So this is like right around like Planet of the Apes time. And you can't, there's like no different score than that, than Planet of the Apes, than the Flint scores.
Wow.
So I can leave you that.
Did you ever hear his Lilies of the Field score?
I haven't.
Lilies of the Field, Sidney Poitier.
Okay. I'll listen to that.
And a group of nuns. Worth it.
He's so great.
Absolutely incredible. But the burning question, just before we leave the subject of Bond, what's your favorite Bond score?
Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Oh, wow.
Nah.
Okay. It's really good. Have All the Time in the World theme is one of the greatest movie themes ever composed.
That was Louis Armstrong's like final recording. Louis Armstrong like passed away like weeks after that.
Really?
And you know, it's used in No Time to Die, but the thing that kind of made me mad about Hans Zimmer is uses the theme from the movie, the one that plays in the opening credits. Mm-hmm. He uses that music when Ralph Fiennes is talking to Daniel Craig by the river. I don't know if it's Thames or not, but he uses that theme. And I'm like, Zimmer, get your John Barry out of here. Like, you
this
don't
is adding
that.
Fuel to the fire.
Because he starts them. Oh my God. So he starts No Time to Die using Thomas Newman's music for the MGM logo. And then he uses David Arnold's Vesper theme for when Bond visits Vesper's grave, which is fine.
Oh yeah.
But I'm like, and then right after that, he uses All the Time in the World. I'm like,
we're like
15 minutes in and you've already used three other composers' music. You got to be kidding me, dude. You got to be kidding me. And then like Bond goes to Cuba and it's just like, it's almost borderline. I don't want to say like it's borderline offensive.
Right.
His take on Cuban. Like, he's in Cuba. This is what Cuban music sounds like. I'm like, dude, this sounds insensitive.
That's hilarious.
So Honor Majesty's Secret Service. My favorite David Arnold score that he's done is Quantum of Solace. I think Bill Conti's score to For Your Eyes Only is just, it's so cringe worthy, but I enjoy it on some level.
But the theme is so catchy.
That's great. But the sort of like sports entertainment channel music during the bobsled chase is just like, dude.
That's right. Not a fan. Yeah, I agree.
George Martin put it out a great score. I thought his score to Live and Let Die was a lot of fun. Marvin Hamlisch's disco version of the Bond stuff was kind of
I don't know about that one. Yeah.
John Barry picked the wrong Roger Moore movies to do.
Well, here's what I always said, that those scores, that the movies don't deserve Barry's scores. The movie, that the scores far exceed whatever the movie gives you. I mean, it's,
There's a company called La La Land Records. They just put out a reissue of Moonraker with deleted tracks. And did you know that Paul Williams sang a demo for his, like he wrote lyrics and sang Moonraker?
Come on, no.
So it's Barry's tune. It's saying the Barry's same tune, but it's Paul Williams singing lyrics that Paul Williams wrote. Go listen to that too.
Oh Jesus, I do need
it
to.
It just
make
came
a
out
list.
Like 2 months ago. I'd never heard of this. It just came out 2 months ago. If you guys let anybody into your James Bond club rewatch, let me know. I would very much enjoy joining you. I mean, I would just say maybe The Living Daylights if you don't care for it. And it's my top three. Like, I'll come on and I talk about the majesty that is John Glenn, who is probably my favorite Bond director.
I've never heard that.
His movies are nuts. Like, Fur Eyes Only is so, like, serious. And he follows up with Octopussy, which is nuts.
Where, like, a pigeon does a double take, I think.
He didn't do that. That was Moonraker. That was Lewis Gilbert. Lewis Gilbert made three of the same James Bond movies. You have You Only Live Twice, Spy Who Loved Me, and Moonraker, where a vehicle captures another vehicle, and someone's in a, they're either in a volcano lair or in an underwater city, or
right,
a city in space. Like, it's
completely
all, like,
interchangeable.
His, they're all the same. So the pigeon double take, which are you, you guys listen to James Bonding?
Is that, no.
Okay. That's
no,
a big
heard
deal,
of
James
it.
Bonding. Yeah. They bring up the pigeon double take a lot.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. The whole thing is, which is more egregious, pigeon double take or the Kananga balloon?
What's that? Remind me?
The Kananga balloon. Remember how Yaphet Kotto dies in Live and Let Die? He sticks the shark pellet in his mouth and he expands into a balloon and pops.
Okay. You see, I'd blank that out.
So listen, I'm not a big fan of people inviting themselves on podcasts, but listen, I love James Bond. So if there's any room, let me know when you guys record. I'll jump.
We will reach out.
Okay.
We will reach out. Well, Ralph, listen, it's been an absolute delight. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for being so
generous
your time today. Is there anything you'd like to plug on your end? Anything on the horizon?
Not really. Just go to casinoskunk.com. It has all the links for, like, the movie and all my podcasts. Check out gettinglostdoc.com. I can't believe we went an hour and a half and didn't talk about it.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Listeners, you can find all six of Ralph's podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. I highly recommend them. And I'm sure there are also many more to come. And yes, for all you Lost fans who have yet to see Getting Lost, or for those who are just curious, the film is available to watch on demand on Google Play, Amazon Prime, and Apple TV, at least here in the UK. And it's a great love letter.
If you're in a place that doesn't have, like, it on those services, we have a Vimeo link up, and it has something like six different subtitles to choose from. And that goes to literally anywhere on the planet. You could watch that version.
Perfect, perfect. And maybe when we next get you back on, we'll actually discuss the movie. It is a documentary about the greatest show of all time. I don't want to hear it. I'll hear no opinion to the contrary. So go and do that. And then join us for the next episode when we will be discussing the new Barry Levinson, Robert De Niro movie, The Alto Knights. See you then.